Long time no see. This session of the Minnesota Senate Subcommittee on Veterans and Military Affairs is now in order. Today, we are going to do a walkthrough and then a markup of the Subcommittee on Veterans Budget and Policy Provisions. We do have a number of folks signed up to testify today. You'll see that it's already 4:30. That means I'm going to ask us to be as expeditious as we possibly can. We're to try to limit testimony to 2 minutes per individual. And you may know that I'm a very nice person, but Keely is not. And she has the clock, and so she's going to tell Rob to be mean to you if you last longer than 2 minutes. So let's aim for that. No disrespect intended, just respect for the time constraints under which we operate. And I also want to underscore that anyone who doesn't have time to make their full voice heard, please feel free to submit whatever you are interested in saying in writing, however you choose to, because we really do want to hear from you, and we don't intend to limit discussion at all. So our first order of business is Senate File 1959, Department of Military Affairs and the Department of Veterans Affairs, Budget Establishment, Provisions, Veterans Benefit Services, Accreditation, Disclosure Requirements to Veterans and Veterans Families, Modifications Provision, Gold and Blue Star Family Honor Plaque on the State Capitol Grounds, placed by the Commissioner of Administration, Requirement Provision, and Appropriation.
Okay, Senator Putnam, do you want to start with the amendment? Delete all the DE? Oh.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Sorry, I was slightly confused. I think that would be a good decision if we could, please, Mr. Chair.
Okay, let's see. Sure. Do you want to go through the A2 amendment?
Mr. Chair and members, I'd be happy to walk through the appropriation spreadsheets that populate Article 1 in the A2 amendment, and then I think my colleague, Mr. Watson, will discuss the provisions that are included in the policy article, Article 2. There should be two spreadsheets in your packet. One is a detailed one that I'll only briefly orient you to before moving to the larger printed and shorter change item spreadsheet. In the detailed spreadsheet, you'll see across the top there's sort of three blocks of numbers. That first block represents the budget biennium we're in, fiscal year 24 and 25. The middle block being the budget biennium for which this committee is appropriating, fiscal years 26 and 27. And then that block on the far right is the fiscal years 28-29 tails biennium. Along the left side, you'll see a detailed breakdown of first, the Department of Military Affairs and the Department of Veterans Affairs budgets by budget program and budget activity. So hopefully you'll be able to find any detail that you would need for the base budgets in those places. But with that said, that tends to be a level of detail that isn't necessarily helpful for looking at the changes that are in the delete all amendment. So if you shift your attention to the change item spreadsheet, timestamp 1009, this spreadsheet shows just the changes that the chair is recommending in the A2 amendment. You'll see here two blocks of numbers, the current biennium, fiscal 26-27, and then the tails biennium of 28-29, and along the left side are just the change items. Doing this very thematically, you'll see that the operating adjustments for both departments, Military Affairs and Veterans Affairs, are recommended by the chair at the governor's proposed levels. In addition, there is some reduction in spending for the Veterans Resilience Project. There was some underspending expected in that line item at the MDVA budget, and that is being reallocated for some CVSO technical assistance coordinators that this committee heard previously as Senator Putnam, Senate File 1452. With those change items, the total change in the A2 amendment is $40.958 million for the budget biennium and $53.744 million for the tails biennium, which match the committee's targets exactly.
Okay. Mr. Watson, would you like to go through the policy? That's what that's called.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I will walk through Article 2, which covers the policy changes in this bill. Section 1 amends the Data Practices Act, and this is part of a change along with Section 3 to permit the staff of the Department of Veterans Affairs to access the MAXIS database to verify eligibility to participate in certain programs. Section 2 increases the total aggregate bond debt the State Armory Building Commission can carry from 15 to 45 million. Sections 4 and 5 are technical changes to the eligibility requirements for burial in state veterans cemeteries. This aligns the federal statutory reference with MDVA current practice. Section 6 increases the annual grant amount that can be made to the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers. Sections 7 and 8 amend the statute providing educational benefits to surviving spouses of a deceased veteran to permit the surviving spouse to access the benefits if they remarry. And Section 9 directs the Minnesota Department of Administration to place a memorial plaque in the Court of Honor in the State Capitol grounds, recognizing Gold Star and Blue Star families.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Watson. Thank you, Mr. Erickson. Senator Putnam, should we want to move the, do you want to go to testifiers or move the A2 right now? Makes no difference. I'm being told we should do the testifiers first. So with that, we will start on the list of testifiers here. First up, Lieutenant Colonel Eric Athman. You may state your name for the record, begin your testimony.
Absolutely, thank you for having me. My name is Lieutenant Colonel Eric Athman. I'm the Director of Operations for the Department of Military Affairs. And I wanna thank the committee today for a few things. One, the inclusion of our policy provision really modifying for the MSABC, allowing us to move from 15 to 45 million in bonding capacity, and then including the change items, specifically the operating adjustment that was proposed in Senate File 1959A2. Notably, though, there were a few things that weren't able to be included in the bill as currently drafted. So DMA requested a $2 million increase in FY26 and $6 million in FY27 to support the enlistment incentives appropriation. This is the Adjutant General's number one priority to continue to support our service members by allowing service members to go to college, be reimbursed for those costs, and to allow us to continue to offer bonuses to those individuals. Two other programs were also not included. One was a $800,000 increase for the Holistic Health and Fitness Program for just 1 year for FY26, as we anticipated the federal government to start funding that program in the following year. And then the last program was the cyber coordination cell increase of $353,026 and $395,000 FY27. We did include an agency letter that did go out with the packets and is posted as well that highlights some of those provisions. I'm hoping that we can continue to work together to potentially find additional funds, specifically to work on the incentives appropriation, to really right-size that to make sure that the National Guard really does feel the support of the legislature and the support of the governor.
All right, thank you, Lieutenant Colonel. With that, I believe the rest of the list of testifiers want to talk about the accreditation part, but is there anybody else who wants to testify on the general underlying bill? And I see nobody coming forward. So with that, I believe first, we have to move the A2. We have to move the A2, which is the DE amendment. So Senator Putnam moves the A2 amendment to Senate File 1959. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The A2 is adopted. Senator Putnam.
Thank you much, Mr. Chair, and members, for the opportunity to talk about this bill. This bill that we have before us is shaped by some serious budgetary constraints, but I still think that it's fair at this point and that we've done some good work to do what we can to support the people who sacrifice on our behalf. So with that, Mr. Chair, I think it's a good time to hear from some folks.
Would you like to move the A4 amendment then?
Mr. Okay. Chair, I believe that's appropriate during the markup phase.
Okay, so we're waiting. Sure. Then we'll hear testimony next.
Yeah, so gotcha. I think we, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Watson can correct us if I'm wrong in terms of procedure, because you look like you want to. I believe that we go through the walkthrough its entirety, and then we sort of take a breath, and then we do markup and do sort of changes or alterations or things we'd like to do to the bill.
Okay. So with that, then we will proceed to testimony. Okay, so first up is John Blomstrom.
No, you're good.
You may state your name and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. John Blomstrom, for the record, from Veterans Guardian. I am the manager of government relations, public affairs. I'm also an 8-year Marine Corps veteran. Before I begin my official testimony, I just wanted to thank my fellow veterans that are in this room for the service of this committee, and especially to Senator Putnam, who is really prioritizing and putting veterans first. So with that, would like to thank him. Currently in its iteration, SF-1959, we do support, believing that the guardrails being put in place and focusing on consumer protections for veterans the state of Minnesota is a truly noble effort and one we can surely support. That being said, were amendments to be introduced that would add accreditation language back in to SF-1959, that would become problematic for us, as currently under 38 CFR 5901, we are unable to become accredited because we are a consulting service that helps veterans put together their VA disability claims. That being said, I also want to state for the record, as I have previously, that we are not opposed to VSOs. We're not adversarial to VSOs. In fact, the first things we do as part of our business practice is ensure that veterans know that there are free services available and that we vector them to those free services. I did want to say very briefly, because I've discussed this numerous times here in the Capitol, that an update yesterday from a ruling in the Third Circuit held that Veterans Guardian has a reasonable probability of showing that its services are speech and that New Jersey State Guard Level Act burdens that speech. In a passage that is particularly relevant to federal law, court stated yesterday that it is seriously doubted whether the provisions of that law barred anyone, including accredited agents and attorneys, from charging fees for initial claims is constitutional. That being said, used to cast doubt on 38 U.S.C. 5904's restriction on when compensation may be charged for the services of agents and attorneys. To the extent the Guard Act doubles down on that ban by criminally prohibiting the charging of fees for any services on initial claims would likely also be deemed unconstitutional under Third Circuit's ruling. For all that being said, we want to make sure that folks in this space understand that our business practice is one of transparency, and that currently under SF-1959 as it is written, unamended, we do stand in support as it is protecting veterans and their right to choose in the state of Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Blomstrom. Next up, Barry Henriksen.
Chair, Barry Henriksen.
Sure, state your name and begin. Yeah.
Barry Henriksen, Department of Minnesota, Veterans of Foreign Wars, Adjutant Quartermaster and Legislative Chair. Thank you for this opportunity. Cracking down on predatory claim companies is the number one priority of the Veterans of Foreign Wars, not just in Minnesota, but across the country nationally, especially ever since the PACT Act was passed. The VFW is concerned about the preying on veterans by skimming their earned Department of Veterans VA benefits. Claim sharks often charge veterans the equivalent of 5 to 10 months of their future disability payments. This is money these veterans may not have, which could put them in debt simply for trying to access their earned benefits. Many of these companies use veterans' login credentials for VA websites and call centers. Some charge tens of thousands of dollars from future benefits for their services. If a veteran receives a disability percentage increase years later, often these companies return seeking more money, whether they performed additional work or not. Furthermore, they routinely obtain medical opinions from affiliated medical providers, which raises ethical concerns. Anyone who assists veterans with the preparation, presentation, or prosecution of VA claims should adhere to established fee caps or be subject to penalties. Therefore, we support this common sense legislation to require that everyone who charges veterans for claims assistance does so under VA accreditation and follows legal precedents as would accredited agents and attorneys. 9 states have passed legislation that prohibit charging veterans for initial claims assistance: Washington, Iowa, Michigan, New York, Illinois, Nevada, New Jersey, Maine, and Massachusetts. We need to stop the predatory practices. No more. Stop promising or guaranteeing an increased disability rating or percentage increase, advertising expedited VA claim decisions. Stop requesting login credentials to access a veteran's personal information through secure VA websites. Stop using confusing tactics or ambiguous language to mislead claimants or coerce them into signing a contract. And stop telling veterans to forgo VA exams and offering health consultations within their own network of doctors. Who is not a claim shark? VA accredited veteran service organizations, VA accredited claims agents, and VA accredited attorneys. We thank you very much for being here today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Hendrickson. Trent Dilks is next. And you can state your name and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Trent Dilks, Legislative Director for the Disabled American Veterans Department of Minnesota. Appreciate the opportunity to speak on this briefly. We're going to fall right in line with a lot of what you're going to hear, so I won't regurgitate it. We support the requirement for accreditation. We believe that the argument that this limits choice is not a legitimate argument. The availability of the choice of choosing somebody who will charge that is not in accordance with the established federal regulations, and the ability to choose somebody who is going to charge over what is allowed, is not a choice that we should be protecting. So when it comes to the idea that this limits options for veterans, our argument is that yes, we want to limit the option to choose fraud, to choose signing away large portions of your benefits, to falling victim to predatory practices. I'm glad that we've kind of narrowed this down early on. There was a lot of discussion. What we're really talking about is specific to the claim sharks, specific to those who are abusing their position and abusing the trust of veterans. And so we strongly support the inclusion of accreditation and the requirements that are already in place. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Michael McLaughlin. And you can state your name and begin your testimony when you're ready.
Michael McLaughlin, Blue Earth County Veteran Service Officer and also the National Legislative Director for the National Association of County Veteran Service Officers. Chairman, ranking members, and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to address this body in support of 1959 as amended. Minnesota CVSOs serve as VA accredited representatives that work tirelessly to help veterans and their dependents submit the best initial claims possible. CVSOs can also represent during the various stages of appeals up to the Board of Veteran Appeals. CVSOs do not represent at the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims, or CAVC, because CVSOs are usually not VA accredited attorneys. With VA accreditation comes federal state oversight, a baseline of training, continuing education, and ethical representation. VA accredited CVSOs, claims agents, and attorneys are the primary means for veterans to receive assistance when filing for their initial claims. Under federal law, only accredited agents and attorneys can charge the veteran for a fee for assisting them with their initial claims that have previously been decided on. Fees are not allowed to be charged for initial claims. This legislation would not prohibit any VA accredited attorneys or agents representing veterans in Minnesota where they are legally allowed to do so. This proposed legislation seeks to crack down on non-accredited VA claims consultants that charge fees to veterans with initial claims. These companies have grown with recent expansions of VA disability benefits, including the PACT Act in 2022. Unfortunately, prior to this rapid expansion in 2006, Congress removed VA's ability to enforce violations of that law. Legislation has been reintroduced on the federal level to address this, but it's been locked in stalemate. That's why states have been stepping forward to move when federal inaction has been slowing things down. They've been doing this to protect veterans. Requiring that anyone who helps a Minnesota veteran with their disability for a fee is legally accredited and prohibiting any individual from guaranteeing VA benefits is not a radical measure. Protecting veterans against unlawful fees from unaccredited actors does not reduce a veteran's ability to get benefit assistance any more than the prohibition on loan sharks prevents somebody from securing financial assistance. As a CVSO and as a veteran, I hope you can move SF 1950 as amended, because it's common sense and it will safeguard our veterans from against unaccredited actors. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McLaughlin. Next up, Greg Peterson. And you may state your name and begin when you are ready.
My name is Greg Peterson. Greetings, committee chair and committee members. I am the Brown County Director of Veteran Services. I've been doing that for 21 years. I've also been the CVSO Association president for a couple of years. And today I come to speak in favor of keeping the requirement of accreditation for all who guide veterans in Minnesota. The U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs already requires anyone who assists veterans in preparing and presenting benefits claims to be accredited. However, that law has no penalties, and the sharks feed on the knowledge that there is no consequences to them operating outside the law. VA accreditation requires each applicant to be subject to an FBI background investigation to determine if the applicant has ever been convicted of a crime in the military or a civilian court, whether they've ever been expelled from a school, ever been disciplined or terminated from employment for dishonesty, fraud, or deceit. Checking for behavioral impairments such as alcohol or substance abuse, mental nervousness, or emotional disorders. When approved, applicants must pass a rigorous test, maintain continuing education, and are listed on the VA's accredited attorney and agent's website. My accreditation number is 13922. I am also a member of the National Association of Veterans Advocates, or NOVA, a 600-plus professional association of attorneys, claims representatives, and veteran service organizations. NOVA is kicking off their annual training conference at the Hilton in downtown Minneapolis tonight. I've attached their three-day training agenda so you can immediately understand the breadth of information that their members will cover to maintain their accreditation with the VA. Claim sharks cannot attend this training because they're not accredited, but our veterans know no different. Imposing an accreditation requirement will expose the fraudulent and regulate the honest. Thank you for hearing my concerns.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Jason Marquardt is next. And you can state your name and begin your testimony when you are ready.
Jason Marquardt, Filmer County Veteran Service Officer and Education Chair for MACVSO. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Accreditation of Veterans Advocate should be the standard in Minnesota. This ensures veterans and their families are getting knowledgeable, professional people that understand the complex laws and regulations the federal government has set forth to navigate. Many veterans ask, what am I eligible for because I served? My answer as a CVSO to them is it depends on many factors because we are all different as veterans. There is no one-size-fits-all when it comes to veterans' benefits, and there is no guarantees the VA will approve their claim. We as CVSOs treat every veteran's claim individually and apply the knowledge we learn through education on the federal regulations that get the veteran their deserved outcome. County veteran service officers, national service officers, accredited attorneys, and agents all have national education requirements set by the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. All persons accredited by the VA must pass a test, whereas non-accredited groups have no requirement to understand or be tested on the understanding of VA laws and regulations. CVSOs in Minnesota, through our national organization, must take an annual test to test our understanding and maintain our accreditation. CVSOs and assistant CVSOs also must take a test through MDVA and the American Legion to maintain our accreditation. Also, CVSOs and assistant CVSOs in Minnesota must qualify by education under statute 197.601 within 6 months of employment. After our initial accreditation, the national annual requirement is 16 continuing education units. We believe that training and maintaining VA accreditation is the best way for advocates or to advocate for our veterans and their families. The VA requires accredited representatives to maintain educational standards, and we feel Minnesota should require representatives to be VA accredited because of the knowledge they have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Marquardt. Next up is Marissa LaCourte. And you may state your name and begin your testimony when you are ready.
My name is Marissa LaCourte, and I am a Goodhue County Veteran Service Officer, which is located in beautiful Red Wing, Minnesota. I currently hold 5 accreditations with the OGC, and my number is 51628. The importance of us having 5 accreditations is I am held accountable by 5 different entities. I must meet their ethics requirements and their education requirements, which are evaluated annually. I am more than a service officer. I am an American Legion post member at 1776. I am a vice commander for the 3rd District, which is, this will be my 5th consecutive year. I am on the Department of Minnesota's Veterans Affairs and Rehab Committee. I'm a lifetime member of the VFW and the DAV. I wear many hats, but above all, I'm a veterans advocate. And I take this role seriously, and it is an absolute honor to have the trust of my fellow brothers and sisters. That trust does not have a price tag, and nobody should ever have to pay for their earned benefits. The word claim shark is being used freely. It's not just the law firms. We have medical consulting groups that are also preying on our veterans. These firms, I can't even describe it, but they make promises that are unethical because they're not realistic. Promising veterans that they can get them 100%, nobody can do that. Every veteran is different. I'm going to tell you a story about a veteran, 87 years old. His wife was put into memory care. Right now, in Minnesota, the average cost of memory care is $9,250. That is just the room. That does not include food, that does not include nursing staff, and that does not include even bathing or basic needs for hygiene. So that it normally puts the bill up to around $12,000 a month. This veteran was panicked on how he was going to pay this bill. I sat with him and I said, guess what? We have a program. We did it together, filled it out. I even expedited it based on his age. While he was sitting in the memory care facility with his wife, one of these claim sharks came up to him and said, I can get you money. Great. And he said, I've already worked with a service officer. That claim shark looked at him and said, oh, but I can expedite it. She can't. That is untrue. I can actually expedite it, and it had already been done. 2 weeks later, the veteran had signed over a check for $2,000. The claim was decided, and that agency still had not even filed the power of attorney. They had no intention of filing it. They just wanted his money. We're still fighting to try to get him a refund. That should not be something we have to fight for. The other significant disadvantage is these firms put in frivolous claims that bog down the system. When I say frivolous, I mean they do things like claim symptoms, not conditions. It takes the VA raters months to figure this out, to figure out what they need to examine. Had another veteran, combat marine, went in for his initial claim, paid over $6,000 for frivolous medical opinions that happened to be ChatGPT generated. $6,000 for ChatGPT generated. ChatGPT is free. And by the end of it, the veteran ended up going to 26 different exams, 26 missed days of work. And he only got 40%.
And Ms. LaCourte, I don't mean to cut you short, but we are up against the clock, and Keely's already given me the hammer.
Perfect.
So if you if you have a final thought to wrap up with, that'll be great.
Yeah, absolutely. This bill needs to happen. It's pretty clear that it's taking advantage of our veterans. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Next, Ross LaCourte. And you may state your name and begin your testimony when you're ready to go.
Good afternoon. I'm Ross LaCourte. I'm a retired United States Marine. I retired to the state of Minnesota because it's awesome here. Start with that. My concern with not passing this bill is the consumer protection that would come along with it. When you do the math, these claim sharks, I heard one where they can charge upwards of 5 times the amount of increase or $12,000, whichever is less. When you do the math work, they spend about 2 to 3 hours working with a veteran to help them with this claim. That comes out to be anywhere from $1,700 to $3,000 an hour. That is outrageous. That is an outrageous amount of money. Would you pay $3,000 for someone to do anything? I don't believe so. The second piece goes into the false or misleading advertising. I've seen the ads all over Facebook, all over TV, all over the internet that state things like, we can expedite claims. We got a claim back in 30 days. Ask any one of the veteran advocates what happens to get a claim back in 30 days, and they will tell you it is because that veteran has some life terminal cancer or life terminal event that is happening. That's the only way they can get it to advance that quickly. They also make claims that state they can get a veteran up to 100%. No one can guarantee that because it is all dependent upon the service, not just the service of the member, but how or what they did during that time. You can have two individuals go to the same recruit training throughout, same deployments, and one comes out with more injuries than another. It's just the way the world works. The purpose of a veteran's disability claim is to help veterans live with the sacrifices they made through their bodies, through their mental health, their physical health, their ethical health, and all of those things. And no one should be making a profit from helping a veteran access these claims. I encourage you to pass this bill into law for mandating accreditation for anyone helping veterans. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. LaCourte. Yes, sir. Next, Larry Fonder.
Oh, sorry.
And you may state your name and begin your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Larry Fonder, and I am the County Veteran Service Officer for Sherburne County. Prior to that, I served as a senior claims representative for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. You've heard my colleagues talk a lot about what has been happening and a lot of the training that we go through to ensure that we have the proper accreditation and the skill set needed to deliver benefits to veterans. And I want to give a couple examples. So as a senior claims representative, I went to and represented 69 cases to the Board of Veterans Appeals. 96% came back as either remanded or we won them. That resulted in over $1.7 million being won for these veterans. Every penny of that money went directly to the veteran. That does not happen when a claim shark is involved in a claim. When an unaccredited representative is, or I should say, an unaccredited agent is assisting a veteran with a claim. Some other arguments have been said that this limits choice, but a claim shark or an unaccredited representative is not a choice. Title 38, Code of Federal Regulations, 14.629 specifically states, no individual may assist claimants in the preparation, presentation, and prosecution of claims for VA benefits as an agent or attorney unless he or she has first been accredited by the VA for such purpose. Federal law says if you are not accredited, you cannot represent that person. So the concept that we're even entertaining that a claim shark can represent somebody here in the state of Minnesota is against the law. It's not something we should even be considering. And we have a huge cadre of collaborative officers, be it lawyers, accredited claims agents, and veteran service officers working together. It is actually an exceptional environment. 2 weeks ago, I recommended to a veteran that he should talk to a law firm. We know our limits when it comes to what we can win and what we cannot do, and it's a collaborative effort between. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Fonder. Last testifier that I have on the list here is Todd Kemmery. And you can state your name and begin your testimony, and hopefully I got your last name right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Todd Kemmery. I am a past president and current national director for the Paralyzed Veterans of America. I'm also a Marine. Paralyzed Veterans of America is unique in its mission. We are comprised of a majority of members that are recognized by the VA as catastrophic disabled. We require specialized caregivers, and our spinal cord injury centers are designed for our specialized care. Equally as important, our membership has non-service connected members, and that is the point I'm finally coming to. Our non-service connected members have an added monthly financial concern. Many are underemployed or unemployed, and they are dependent upon SSDI as their primary source of income. It becomes clear rather quickly that an average of $1,200, $1,500 a month is financially restrictive for many budgets. Any added extra fees, unexpected costs, and somebody's going to have to be making choices. Do I pay for gas for my car? Do I put food on the table? Budgets are razor thin. It is important that We have your support for the protection of those that are the most vulnerable of our veterans community. With that, I'd like to thank the committee and the chair for the opportunity to be able to speak on our concerns. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kemmery. So, Senator Putnam, would you like to offer the A4 amendment?
Mr. Chair, I would. If we were transitioning into markup mode, I would like to offer the A4 amendment.
Okay. Senator Putnam offers the A4 amendment. It should be in your packet. Senator Putnam, do you want to discuss the A4 amendment?
I would like to. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this is something we've been talking about all session, and it's been something that I think many of us were largely unfamiliar about. But it's something that we've all had an opportunity to learn about. And what you have before you, this A4 amendment, is a product of that learning. Many of us have been meeting and talking, and I want to thank Mr. Blomstrom for his grace and his advocacy. But we have been meeting and talking about how to solve this problem. As you heard from the testifiers who were just here moments ago, this is not a problem we can just sort of hope goes away, nor can we comfort ourselves with platitudes, words like choice. The choice doesn't matter. The choice to be exploited is not a real choice. The right to dignity and a fair deal is much more important and much more in tune with our responsibilities. And in the process of learning more about this issue, we've discovered just how heinous this can be sometimes, the kind of exploitation over the people who are most in need of our protection. This amendment takes care of some of those issues, and I'd like to tell you a little bit about the core and the nature of this amendment. The base core elements of it came from Senator Howe. Senator Howe offered us some language to reintroduce accreditation into this bill. And then working with MDVA and the Commander's Task Force, with veterans themselves, with conversations with all different kinds of advocates, we also included another provision which configures the disclosure requirements at the close of the bill, this thus making it easier for attorneys to do this work as well in the state of Minnesota. Now, we will hear about choice. We've heard about this question of choice, and it's been the argument that caused me the most consternation trying to figure that out, because no one wants to limit the choices that veterans have. But members, in the states that have passed accreditation, the number of veterans receiving benefits has increased and not decreased, from 18 to 30% in some cases, which is a rate of a 66% increase over time. So not only does accreditation not limit choice, accreditation does not stop veterans from getting their benefits. It actively increases it. More veterans are getting benefits in the states that have passed this. New Jersey passed this unanimously through their legislature, which is 1/3 Republican and 2/3 Democrat. Throughout state legislatures, throughout this country, this is a bipartisan issue of people standing up to protect veterans and give them the basic consumer protection rights that they deserve. We hear a lot about fraud, waste, and abuse, members, but we're seeing it right in front of us, and we have an opportunity to stop it and to protect the folks who need our help the most. Mr. Chair, with that being said, I offer the A4 amendment.
Okay, Senator Putnam offers the A4 amendment. Members, discussion on the A4. Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to have a roll call on that.
Roll call requested, roll call grant. Emory, member, discussion on the A4.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Mr. Blomstrom did mention in his testimony that, as you just said, Senator Putnam, that the New Jersey legislature passed this particular language, but now before a U.S. Court of Appeals has been reversed.
Senator Putnam.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, Senator Anderson, if you're ready to respond. That's actually not true. It has not been reversed. It has been remanded to a lower court, and it did not find in the favor of Veterans Gardens at all. In fact, prior in the case when this was first brought, it was... Vets Guardians attempted a summary injunction to throw it out, and the appeals court said, no, that's not the case. So what happened today is it was not found in favor of Vets Guardians. It was remanded to a lower court, and that's a very important distinction. And I'll also add, there are a number of other states where this has also passed where there have not been concerns. But I will also add, as long as we're talking about court cases, Some of these corporations are currently subject to class action lawsuits for charging usurious rates for exactly what we're trying to stop right now. The issue is that with accreditation, and anyone can be accredited, this is very important, it's true that the corporation cannot be accredited, but everyone who works for that corporation can be. So this does not limit the operation of those corporations in our state. It just means that they've got to be trained and responsible and held accountable if they can. So they can get accredited. And they can continue this work, but part of the reason why people don't want to get accredited is with it comes restrictions on how much you can charge. And so that's the deeper issue. I'm sorry for interrupting, Senator Anderson, but I just wanted to clarify that.
You like to ramble.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you. Well, my understanding and the number of people that have been denied benefits by the VA is over 300,000 people, and they want an appeal. And so if you limit them by accrediting these people who want to help veterans, if the VA is not going to give them their benefits, where do they go? Because they can't go back to the VA. The VA already said, no way, Jose. And so who is it that gets to come in? So now you're going to propose, and right now there's lawyers that are accredited but don't want to work here in Minnesota because of the restrictions we have in this situation. So who is it that's going to help those people that want to appeal their claim because they feel that they deserve what they first came to the VA for to begin with?
Senator Putnam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Anderson. I very much appreciate the sincerity of your question, because I feel it too. In no way do I want to limit opportunities for veterans. That's not the goal at all. And if I were convinced that this would do that, I wouldn't be fighting as hard as I am for this issue. You'll note that also in the amendment, we are lessening some of the constraints that impact those attorneys. So those attorneys are probably going to have a better chance of doing that work in the state as well now. And I will say, from what I've heard, there is no waiting list for CVSOs for people who want to get help from their county veteran service officers. My goal, and what I'm thinking this helps us do, is it helps, I guess, sort of prune the tree, if it were. Sort of prune the tree. So we get rid of a couple bad apples, but we also make the apples who are there much stronger, so that we know that the individuals who are doing this work are not just held accountable, but they are themselves able to have various kinds of training that we were just hearing about before, so that the advocates we have can actually be effective advocates, and they can do that work. Because I can't tell you how hard I feel that there might be a chance that because of this legislation or this work, someone wouldn't have recourse to an advocate to get what they deserve. If I thought that were true at all, I would have nothing to do with this. But the research and the work that we've done over the past couple of months makes it clear to me that that's not the case. That this, in fact, is just making sure that we have quality representatives for the people who need them.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I talked to my CVSO officer, and I said to him, I wanted to know, because supposedly he hadn't contacted me, and someone had put a bug in his ear that he should contact me. And so I called him and talked to him. And he told me that back in September of last year, he had two individuals that supposedly had been taken advantage of by a company who said they, could help him with their appeal. And I said, so, Mr. Picard, what did you do with those individual companies? I sent them to the Attorney General, Minnesota State Attorney General. And I asked that question when we had this first bill, when your 1894 bill came up. Why don't we send them to the Attorney General and let them take over? They have plenty of attorneys. When I first did a study on the Attorney General, we used to have just only 70 attorneys representing the state back in the late 1960s. We're over almost 300 attorneys. They got plenty of attorneys that can help VA denied appeals to veterans. So I'm just baffled by the fact that he didn't want to bother me as a veterans of service officer, because he said, I know where I can get help to stop these people from helping. The Attorney General here in Minnesota. The Attorney General is always brought up to help with situations like this. So I'm just a little baffled by the fact that we're trying to paint over things when there is a remedy that we have with the Attorney General.
Senator Putnam.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Senator Anderson. I think that that's a legitimate question to ask, and that's part of why we changed the penalty language at the very bottom of the bill. The penalty language moves all of this stuff from what it used to be, which was a mere $1,000 fine. That was the old penalty that we could have pursued, was a $1,000 fine. And with the amount of money, it's like $4 billion a week in the country goes to veterans benefits, the sheer amount of money that's flowing through the space, a $1,000 fine is not a true impediment to a large corporation. When we move this statute into where it's at now, which is going to be part of the consumer protection statute, in that space, the Attorney General and other folks can also sue for injunction to stop the behavior, and the penalties can be greater. Still, those penalties will go to the Support Our Troops account, which I think is wonderful. But what I'm saying is that that's the point that you bring up is exactly why this bill was needed, at least that last paragraph, because it makes it more efficient and more doable to actually prosecute some of these bad actors.
Senator Anderson, anything else? Anybody else? Questions on the A4? Senator Dornick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And first, I want to thank Senator Putnam. I know this has been tough for all of us here. We all support veterans. We all want to do what's right, and it's been confusing for me too. So just I want to thank you, and then to all the testifiers and those that served our country, thank you so much for being here and testifying. So I guess I want to ask a couple questions, Senator Putnam. One is, we have 9 states. Did we take the language from any state to try to work through the best ones? There's 9 of them, and we heard about New Jersey's. They're struggling a little bit. So just wondering if we copied one of the states that's more successful in this.
Senator Putnam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Dornick, I have to admit I don't know. I will tell you that lots of it in its current formation came from, like I said, Senator Howe and Senator Lange and Senator Mitchell all have contributed different parts to this, but I don't know where the original language came from, so I apologize for not knowing that, Senator Dornick.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dornick. One follow-up. So sure. You mentioned Mr. Howe, Senator Howe and some of the senators that served in the military and some are still serving, and they're still concerned, they still have. I know Senator Howe, I asked him before I came in here just to see where you at, and there's some good things in here that the base amendment that he supports. Mm-hmm. There's still some issues that we're concerned, they're very concerned about. So, and with the feds, they kind of, well, the answer I got was it's more of a federal issue. I know that you want to do it as a state. So I support the concept and we support, but yet there's still some things that I'm not quite at peace at yet, so I know it's closer, and so with that, I just want to thank you for your work, and it's again, there's just a little bit more tweaking that I would like to see. So with that, thank you, Mr.
Thanks. Senator Putnam, any response?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dornick, thank you for your comments. I appreciate them deeply, as I think you know. I will say that in terms of interaction with the federal government, as Mr. Fonder mentioned, what we're talking about is already basically illegal in the federal government, but there is no enforcement mechanism. By including accreditation, we are creating that enforcement mechanism so that this behavior that is existing in this kind of gray area now becomes clear what's okay and what's not, and how you can hold someone accountable for messing around in that gray area. I agree that I think it would be great if we had a federal law across the way, and there are actual federal laws that are being considered in a bipartisan manner to do very similar things to what we're trying to do here now. But when I think of some of the stories that we've heard, and I think that we can take care of this now, we can stop veterans from being exploited right now in our state and not have to wait for the federal government to catch up to us, I think we have a moral obligation to do so.
Any other members? Okay, seeing none, we have a roll call. We're going to take a vote on the A4 amendment. A roll call has been requested and granted. We'll take the roll.
Senator Putnam?
Aye.
Senator Anderson?
No.
Senator Dornick?
No.
Senator Duckworth? Senator Gustafson?
Yes.
Senator Kunesh?
Yes.
Senator Kupep?
Yes.
Senator Seeberger?
Yes.
Senator Wiesenberg?
No.
Senator Duckworth?
Okay, with 5 yes votes and 3 no votes, the A4 amendment to Senate File 1959 is adopted. We are to the underlying bill, or as it is amended. Any discussions on the
rest? Mr. Chair, like a roll call on the final bill.
Sure, roll call is requested and roll call granted. Any other discussions on the final bill? Seeing none, Senator Putnam, any last comments before we go to a roll call vote?
No, members, thank you for the discussion. I want to take a moment also to thank everyone who came here to testify and to thank everyone who advocates, because things don't get changed and they don't get better unless you show up, and you showed up. So thank you for that. I know that this is a difficult issue, but it's an issue that the more I've studied, again, we're talking specifically about the claiming shark concern, the more I've studied, the more clear it's come to me that this is something that is a moral and practical imperative. So I hope that as we continue to talk about this issue and think about it with open hearts and open minds, that we are all able to come to a place where the final vets bill is something that we can all feel proud of. That's my goal.
Senator Putnam, we need to make a motion to refer this to the full committee before we can actually take a vote on it. So would you like to make that motion, Senator Putnam?
I'll do that, sure. I move that the Senate File 1959 be recommended to pass and referred to the committee, the full committee, on agriculture, veterans, broadband, and rural development.
Mr. Chair.
As amended.
As amended.
Senator Anderson.
As amended.
Yep, as amended. Okay, with that then, we'll take the roll.
Senator Putnam?
Aye.
Senator Anderson?
No.
Senator Dornick? Senator Duckworth? Senator Gustafson?
Aye.
Senator Kunesh?
Aye.
Senator Kupek?
Aye.
Senator Seeberger?
Yes.
Senator Wiesenberg?
No.
Senator Duckworth?
Okay, and with that, there being 5 yes votes and 3 no votes, Senate File 1959, as amended, has been referred to the full Committee on Agriculture, Broadband, and Veterans Affairs. And with that, I guess I gotta hit the hammer. With that, there being no other business before the committee, we are adjourned.